There are two birds on a tree. They are the best of friends. One bird is sitting silently in one of the lower branches, just observing. And the other bird is flitting from branch to branch. Tree is loaded with fruits. And so this bird is going around and tasting all the fruits. He bites into them. And when he gets a sweet fruit, he is very happy. Starts jumping for joy. And then when he gets a fruit that is sour or bitter or rotten, then his mouth gets very miserable, very unhappy. So he comes to the other bird and sits with that little bird for a while. And when he sits, then slowly his mind becomes peaceful because all that agitation of the rotten, sour fruits is gone from his mouth. So again, he then goes out and again he does the same thing. He's tasting the fruits. He gets some sweet, very happy, gets sour, bitter, miserable. This beautiful example from the Mundaka Upanishad, one of the Upanishads, illustrates our own self, our own personality. We also have two birds within us, or we are two birds, let us say, put it that way. The one bird is the ego. That is jumping from one part of the world to the other, tasting different pleasures, acquiring, wanting, enjoying. And they could be either physical pleasures, mental, you know, satisfaction, intellectual success, financial, worldly property. So when I get what I wanted, what I desired, and I get something, a sweet fruit, then I'm very happy. Aha, it's so wonderful. Life is great and everything is beautiful and all that. And so my joy is multiplied many times when I get the sweet fruit. And then next time life gives me a fruit that is bitter or that is sour or that is rotten. And then I start crying, oh, you know, why is God punishing me? Why am I so miserable? Why is this person giving me sorrow, that person giving me sorrow, that thing? And then we then come crying to God, you know. So our ego is this upper bird that is flying from branch to branch. And our self, the Lord's presence, the consciousness within us is that lower bird. And that bird is sitting and watching what is happening, very peaceful, very silent, just a witness. And he sees what is happening in this world, how in this world bird is running around from branch to branch. So similarly, the self within us, God's presence, what we call as consciousness or the divinity, is that silent witness that watches everything that is happening, does not participate, just as that lower bird does not participate in the worldly things. He's all content, all peaceful, all happy. So similarly, the self within us, the God or the divinity, is all content, all happy, all peaceful. And when we suffer in the world, when we get problems, could be from family or work or job or stress or weather or whatever, stock market, we then go crying to God or we go crying to the inner self, asking for solace. We go to the temple or church or mosque, and there we get some element of peace. So, and then once we get that, things are okay now, I am peaceful. Then again we go out, and we forget that it is the self within that is giving me everything what I have. But then we again get this ego, you know, I did this, I did that. And so in this world, we go through joys and sorrows. So the trick of the success of our endeavor should be that to stay as much as possible close to that lower bird. Even when you are functioning in the world, part of your attention should be on that lower bird. Because when you are in proximity with that lower bird, with that self, of course in that example, the one bird is far and the other one is below, but our self is closest to us, is with us at all times. So when I am functioning in the world, whatever activities I am doing, whether at home or at work or wherever, part of my attention should be on the inner self, the lower bird, because that is where all my peace and all my contentment and all my joy and all my happiness lies. Because the world will give us some sour fruits, will give us bitter fruits, will give us sweet fruits. And a person who is caught up in the ego, in this lower self, then that person will go through life's fluctuations. So that is the beauty of this beautiful example, that stay in touch with your inner self. Even while you are functioning in the world, be in contact with the inner divinity. Then all your activities will be divine. They will be peaceful. They will be happy. And even when the world gives you sorrow, that sorrow will not affect you, because you will be protected by that lower bird. So today I thought, instead of talking about this text, I thought we should remove some of the misconceptions of who is God or what is God, because when we talk about Advaita, that there is no two, there is only one, that creates a lot of misconceptions in people's mind. So who is God and what is my relationship with God? I thought I would spend a little bit time talking about that. And I thought the bird example would lead us into, because they say God is our inner self. And God is everywhere, all pervading. He's said to be in every cell, in every branch, in every tree, in every cell of our body, in everything. So what is my relationship with God? And different religions portray this relationship differently. The majority of the faiths in the world talk about Dvaita or duality, that God is all-powerful, all-loving, all-compassionate. Some people even say God is very punitive, you know, he will punish you or whatever. But God is this omnipotent power sitting somewhere, and I am this helpless creature who is suffering, and then because of my good or bad deeds, he is watching, and then he's going to punish me, you know, for my bad deeds, reward me for my good deeds, and then eventually I'll end up in heaven or hell. And most religions, including Hinduism also, a large number of Hindus believe in this. Christianity, Islam, the Jewish faith, most of them are based on duality. That there is this Father in heaven, or Allah, or whatever you want to call, and I am this helpless creature. And they say you should love God, you should worship him, you should fear him. You know, God fearing, that's one of the terms they use. I think as people grow a little bit in their spiritual understanding, or as they evolve, they come to what is called, from Dvaita, it is to Vishisht Advaita. Vishisht Advaita means I am part of the whole. God is everything. I am a tiny little part. So I am not separate from him, but I am a tiny little part, just as the rays of the sun. You know, the sun is huge, and the rays are tiny little projections or little particles that are emerging from the sun. So I am this tiny little, but I am part of this whole, and God is everything, and I am a part of it. And so what is happening is, slowly, the seeker's understanding is evolving. Then comes this Advaita, where there is no two. There is only one. And everything is nothing but that consciousness alone. And there is no difference between me. And that's where people get lost. Say, how can I be that? Up to this day, okay, I understand. Okay, God is all-powerful. I am a part of him. I am a creation. But how can he and I be one? And there people have a problem. You know, that's where most of the confusion arises. So we say that at this moment, we are all in this ego of this world. And at this ego state, it is impossible to experience Advaita. You cannot experience that oneness as long as you are lost in the ego and in the dream of this world. Is this world a dream? So only when you become a realized master, like Shankaracharya, you know, who propagated the Advaita philosophy, said that there is only one reality, everything is just an expression. Buddha gave us the same thing. He said there is a state of nirvana, which is beyond sorrow, which is beyond. And that experience, what he describes, is the same experience described by Shankaracharya in his non-dual Advaita philosophy. Even though we talk about Advaita, but we practice Dvaita and Vishishta Dvaita. Because at this stage, it is impossible, unless you are a Jesus or a Buddha or a Shankaracharya or a Swami Chinmayananda, you cannot experience that non-duality. And in this dream, how do I get this final experience? How do I reach that? So the process we have given here, one is gardening. Because our mind is full of negative vasanas, negative tendencies. Just as a good gardener, when she goes out into her garden, in her backyard, her garden will have some flowers, some fruits, and will have some weeds. And so she has to violently pull out the weeds from the roots, otherwise they will grow and take over the whole garden. She won't have any flowers, she won't have any fruits. She has to practice violence. Himsa has to be practiced because these weeds are a problem in her garden. She has to pull them out so that her garden may bloom with beautiful flowers, sweet fruits. Similarly, in this world, there are some people who are weeds, you know, who may be criminals or rapists or murderers. And so such people have to be treated, you know, with justice. They have to be, you know, put or locked up or put in jail or whatever. So I have to, in my life, constantly practice gardening. I have to remove the weeds from my mind, all the negative tendencies, anger, greed, and jealousy, and slowly replace them with the beautiful flowers of love, compassion, kindness. So as my heart becomes more and more filled with love and compassion, my mind will become more quiet, because a mind that is full of anger, jealousy, like if you're angry at somebody, or you had a bad day, next morning you wake up, you cannot meditate. You know why? Because your mind is running at 100 miles an hour. It's only when you have lived your life during the day, if your day has been quiet, has been peaceful, has been happy, your meditation will be good, your mind will be silent. So they say practice gardening on your mind. Remove all the weeds and fill it with beautiful flowers and sweet fruits. Then, as you do that, as your mind becomes quieter, then the inner voice of God becomes more audible. Then you don't need to go to heaven, or you don't need to, you know, anywhere, because wherever you are in heaven. Heaven is not a place you need to go. Heaven is the state of being. When my heart is quiet, when my heart is peaceful, when my heart is happy, I am already in heaven. So, when your mind is peaceful, you're already in heaven. And if your mind is disturbed, if you're angry, if you're sad, if you're depressed, if you're agitated, then you are in hell. There is no place else to go. So they say heaven and hell are in the mind. A mind that is peaceful, a mind that is centered on the Lord is happy. A mind that is caught up in the world is unhappy. So they say serve the world as a manifestation of the Lord. See, you become what you are close to, you know, like a basketball player. He all the time is watching videos of Michael Jordan and Kobe and all. So he wants to become a great basketball player. A physicist reads books by Einstein and Oppenheimer. A biologist may, you know, read Life of Pauling. So whatever you want to become, you get to know that. And the way you get close, by seeing that person, by seeing how that person functioned, what he did. So when I see the world, I see that there is only one divinity appearing in all. And so such a person develops an attitude of love, compassion, that my God that has created me has created all these plants. And then he has love for the environment, love for animals, love for all other humans. And even when he or she is doing their job, whatever they are doing it as a service of the Lord, because the Lord is the one. So constant attitude of service also purifies the mind. Because as you give of yourself, the less becomes your selfishness. The more you give, the more you become loving, compassionate, kind. And so you serve the world. Then is the world a dream? Is it real or unreal? You know, that is always a question. And people say, well, the world is real. How can you call it unreal? We don't say that the world is unreal. Because you can experience it. You can see it. You can touch it. So if you say this world is unreal, then people also get confused. The best way to describe the world is to describe the ocean and the waves. Now, are the waves real or unreal? The waves are real. And they appear for a while and then they disappear. And again they appear and again. And there are thousands of waves constantly appearing and disappearing. So what we say, the real is the ocean. The ocean, which is the base or the substratum or the origin of the ocean, is real. The waves are an appearance. The waves appear for a while, play about, and disappear. Of course, the wave only appears for maybe 30 seconds or a minute. We are all like that wave that appears for a short while. Yeah, maybe 70 or 80 or 90 years. But when it think about the billions of years from creation, and even before that, this is only one creation, and there have been many such creations. When the world appears and disappears, then our life is just like a wave. So when we say the world is not real, what we mean is it is a temporary appearance. And my life is also a temporary appearance. And in this life itself is the only opportunity I have to realize the truth. As a human being alone, I have the ability to know the truth. I have the ability to reach God. I have the ability to realize. So use this opportunity to love other waves and see that all other waves have appeared from that one ocean. And as long as the wave thinks I am the wave, then the wave will suffer because of my life is temporary. I'm going to be dying in a short while. And this big wave I'm jealous of, and this small wave I'm proud of. And then I look down upon the little waves and I become jealous, or I want to become big like the big waves. So as long as you think you are the wave, you will have suffering. But if you think I am the ocean and I am at this moment appeared as a wave, then nothing happens to me. If the wave goes, it's okay. My waveform went, but I as the ocean am eternal. So constantly tell yourself that I am that eternal ocean who at this moment is this wave called Diana or Jigisha or Anil or Deepika. These are my names of this little wave I have. But in reality, I am that ocean. And whether this wave lives or not, nothing happens to me. So it's not that you live your life differently. You just change your attitude to life. And then let the wave is meant to one day it will go up, 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 and it will be on the top and then go down, 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 down. It'll be so same way in my life, and there'll be a time when I'll be growing happy, and then comes the youth, and then comes the middle age, and then going down. So what? You know, it happens to everybody. Nobody is immune from that. So this world is not really a dream in the sense of it is unreal. It is just a temporary appearance. And in this unreal world, this temporary world, I see the people, and I serve them, and I love them. And through that, I evolve. And through loving the people, I love God. Because God is the one. So the more you love, the closer you become. Like a mother and her daughter. You know, now the daughter got married and went away. But the mother is all the time in her mind, always has my daughter. And then something happens to the daughter, say she had a problem with her husband, or, you know, they have a fight and all, and the daughter calls the mother and starts crying. The mother's heart is, you know, so filled with so much, or it could be the son also, it doesn't matter. But why? Because she identifies, this is me, you know, the daughter or the son. The closeness of the relationship is there, that no matter who, however far the child may be, if something is going wrong, the mother immediately comes to know. So the more you love somebody, the more you identify, the closer you become. So they say develop that kind of a relationship with God, a relationship of love, not a relationship of fear or But a really, and it, like we said, there are many different relationships, a relationship of a friend, of a lover, of a divine father, of a child. But love God, and then slowly, just as the mother identifies totally with her daughter or with her son, so I identify with God. I through constant remembrance of God, and it doesn't matter which form you pick. You could pick the mother goddess, you can pick Jesus, you can do that. And as you slowly, slowly get closer, the more you think about him, the more you serve him, the more you read about him, through the scriptures, reading the books, you come closer and closer to that divinity. And ultimately, then there is, you reach one, just as for the mother, the child and she are one. There is no difference. So similarly, that attitude, when I can think of God as often as I think of my child, then I will reach that. So by constant remembrance, constant service, constant love, ultimately you reach that non-dual state. Like for the mother, she is not separate from her daughter or from her son. So that is called the non-dual state, which does not mean that I disappear into this void of nothingness and I become nobody. In fact, a person who becomes one with that divinity becomes a very powerful instrument of service. He becomes then a Jesus or a Buddha or a Swami Chinmayananda. Why? Because then his little ego is disappeared. There is no ego in that person, and that person becomes an instrument, becomes a prophet. So that is the process of relationship with God and what we mean by duality. It's okay to start as God and I are separate, and you can keep working and loving, but ultimately your experience will become that. And once you experience that, then you will see the whole world as nothing but that divinity. Then this world will disappear and all you will see is only God. So that is the experience. So I just wanted to, because people have a lot of questions and doubts about that, and from time to time. And there's a lot of, at least in India, big arguments, you know, which is correct. Duality is correct. And people are passionate and written so many books. And then others who are from the Madhava school, you know, Vishishta Advaita, that is the only one. And, you know, and then, of course, there are a few who preach Advaita. Majority are in these two camps, which is all over the world. Even in Christianity, Islam, everywhere, they talk about God as being separate from us. So I thought I would clarify that. I hope I was able to remove some misconceptions. Any comments and thoughts? No, there too, yeah. That he is the sun, I am the ray of the sun. But in Advaita, that alone I am. Then I am not this body. I am not even a part of him. He and I are one. There is no two. In the Vishishta Advaita, there are still two, like the ray and the sun. The ray thinks I have emerged from the sun, I am part of the sun, but I am still separate. So there is some togetherness and some separateness. It is kind of an in-between stage. Then there is no one else to speak. In fact, in this stage, you don't even speak. You don't even say, because there is nothing to say, there is no one to talk to. In that state, there is only oneness. So it's a progression. But you are right, that's a good point. No, he functions. In fact, he functions better than you and me. Because then there is no ego. He becomes an instrument of the Lord. Then the Lord is working. He is not working. Then he becomes a Jesus, or he becomes a Swami Chinmayananda. Swami Chinmayananda, after he came down from the Himalayas, having spent many years meditating and realized the truth, he worked for 43 years in the world. From 1950 to 1993, 43 years he worked. Very efficiently. He used to sleep only 3 hours at night. Worked 21 hours a day. But the ego is not there. Then that person becomes, it's the Lord walking. It's the Lord walking and talking. That's what Jesus was, Buddha was. Buddha, what the state of nirvana he describes is that. Once they have experienced that, then they have no fear. They have no fear because they know I am that immortal soul. And you can crucify them or you can do anything, they become fearless. Then no longer there is that ego. Perceiver, feeler, thinker is no longer there. His body is just an instrument for the Lord to function. And I am that divinity. That is the final experience. He doesn't have to say that. But that is his experience. He doesn't go around saying, I am God. No. But he is me. It's not I am God, but he is me. God is me. God is functioning through me. That. It's a subtle difference. If you start saying, I am God, then the little ego comes in. You know, I am somebody special and everybody should worship me. And that's not the idea. In fact, there is extreme humility. Because there is no ego, so there is no I at all in that person. He alone is there. He or she, it, the consciousness.
So how do you deal with that?
Well, you put pesticide on them. You have to destroy them. You can't let the weeds survive because they will take over your garden.
Okay, what if there are people in your life?
Oh, what about if there's people in your life that are weeds? You can't put the pesticide on them. I think take every person as an opportunity to evolve. Because see, he never makes any mistakes. The Lord has never made any mistakes so far, at least that I know of. He may have, but at least wherever he has placed me is the perfect place for me to evolve, to grow, to become more spiritual. And it is a lesson that he has given me. If I take that lesson and learn and evolve, then I will have passed that grade. Then I'll go to the next one. But if I don't learn, then I have to repeat that grade again. If I'm in first grade and I don't learn first grade and I don't pass, then the second year, okay, sorry, you have to go again in first grade. And here in this country, they just promote everybody, whether they can read or not. But in India, they don't. If you can't read, sorry, you don't go to the second grade. You come back and you keep, some people repeat 2-3 years the same grade if they don't meet up to the expectation. So similarly in life, all the people, the opportunities, the situations have been given by that almighty loving Father as an opportunity for me to grow spiritually, for me to evolve, for me to become a better person. And if I learn from that lesson, and even somebody who is giving me a hard time, you say, thank you very much. Because the more it's like a knife. You know, knife to be sharpened has to go through rough. Otherwise, the knife is dull. It cannot work, cannot do its job. But when it's goes against a rough surface, then the knife becomes sharp and then it can do its job. So this person or this situation is helping me to evolve, helping me to become a better individual, helping me. So every situation, yeah, you cannot put the pesticide on those people, but think of them as an opportunity to grow so that I may develop more patience, I may develop more love, I may develop more tolerance, I may develop more dhriti, that is fortitude, the ability to go through life, you know, life's problems without. So think of them as opportunity to grow. Right, no, these are all steps. See, it's not that they become blind. It's not that Jesus did not see the world as good and bad. Or Swami Chinmayananda. Swami Chinmayananda saw that. And when there were situations where people in the mission were not doing a good job, like I had one time in LA, he had asked them to build a center, and they, for years they were procrastinating. Then one day he sat down in the public and took the board members and really let them have it for 45 minutes constantly. They felt so ashamed that within a year they built the mission. Within a year, because he publicly, first he had talked to them privately, said, oh, we don't have money, center will not. This was before Swami Ishwarananda was there. They were just a board member. And he took them to task. And you could see that power in his voice, how they were totally humiliated. But he found that was the only way to get them to work. And these were very, very prominent members of the community, physicians and, you know, a lot of who were the board members. And they were not doing anything. And they had tried for years. And I was there, and that 45 minutes, I was so scared. I've never been this scared in my life. His voice had so much power in it. And those people, I'm sure they must have crawled under the ground the way he was addressing them. But That was the medicine they needed. Sometimes your doctor has to give an injection. If the pills doesn't work, has to give an injection or do major surgery, cut off, you know, or something. So he felt that was required. So it's not that they become just useless little pawns, you know, just walking around like zombies. No, they are actually more alert to what is good for the totality. See, they don't look at what is good for me or what is good for my family. They look at what is good for the entire. So they actually become more alert and more sharp than you and me. It's not that they become useless little creatures just wandering around waiting to die. No, their actually senses are more sharp. They are more in tune with the reality. That's what, there is a beautiful book in the office called Jeevan Muktanand Lahiri. And where he says this wise person, Pure Pauran Pashyan Narivati Nama Kritima. He says, if he's in a fair, you know, like the Kern County Fair, and people are laughing and going up and down the rides and eating the food, and, you know, he'll sit with them, he'll enjoy, you know, he's fine with them. And then next day he's traveling and he happens to be walking. And in those days people used to walk. And he happens to be in the riverbank and night falls. And it's cold and it's dark and it's the stones. And he's sleeping all alone in the stones. He hasn't eaten all day. Munirna Vyamoham Bhajati Guru Diksha Kshetatama. He says he never gets deluded. He says, okay. He is equally happy with the people having fun, and he's equally happy sitting on the rocks, because his joy is not from objects. His joy is within. And so that is the state of this wise person. And he works for the totality. He does not work for one individual or for one community or one race or one, but he works for all. He becomes an instrument of betterment of mankind. You know why? Because out of compassion. Because he says, I have experienced that truth. And I know how beautiful that experience was. And all these people are suffering in ignorance. That's what Swami Chinmayananda, when he discovered the truth with his teacher in the Himalayas, he told his teacher, I want to go to India, to the plains, and then to spread this knowledge. His teacher says, why do you want to do that? You will get caught up in the world. He said, no, I have experienced this, and I'm unhappy that my countrymen in India are suffering so much in ignorance, in wrong beliefs, in superstitions, you know, under the influence of some people who are using religion as a business. So he all his life spoke out against that. So out of compassion, he traveled not only in India, but throughout the world later on to spread this knowledge, because he felt that this knowledge, and that's why we have this building here, because one individual came down from the Himalayas to spread this knowledge. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here speaking. Because whatever we have, we owe to that one person. So they become instrument of change. You know, they are not just useless people. You know. And they do what is required at this moment. Whatever is required. For the betterment of all. So Advaita does not mean that he stops functioning. Inside he knows. Inside he knows that I am this divinity functioning through this body. But he still has to eat. He still has to take a shower. He still has to change his clothes. I mean, he has to do everything. He has to deal with people and, you know, and situations. But inside does not get deluded. Like Christ was not deluded even when they were taking him to the cross. He said, Father, forgive them. Why? Because he could see that these people don't know what they're doing. And also he could see that what kind of sin they will incur. Because if you torture a man of God, that is the worst sin you can commit. And he knew that these people will really, really have to pay. No matter what he said, Father, forgive them. But Father will not forgive them. Nobody will be forgiven if you torture a man of God. And that's why in his heart, he felt compassion for all of them. He didn't feel anger. He didn't feel hatred. He didn't feel pain. He only felt love and compassion. Because he knew what is going to happen to these people. How much they will suffer for torturing a man of God. Not wasn't his ego speaking. But he knew that. And, you know, these wise people know. And the Father in heaven will never forgive somebody who has done that. That person will have to totally pay the consequences, I'm sure. And again, it's not him. It's his, their own karmas will haunt them. It's not that the Father in heaven will torture them, but their own karmas will produce them with those results. That's why they say you should love and respect men of God. Don't ever speak evil about them. Now, I think what he meant was that there are three kinds of situations. One is a low self-esteem, where a person thinks, I'm useless, I'm worthless, I'm a little insect, I'm good for nothing, I am a miserable creature, I'm suffering, and the whole world is, you know, after me, and I am the most miserable. So that is low self-esteem. High self-esteem is the person becomes arrogant, and I'm the king of the world, I am the greatest, I'm the, you know, if I'm the president of the country, or I'm a great politician, or a sportsman, or artist, or a singer, and the whole world is at my feet, you know, everybody's praising me, and they're, you know, buying my poster, then that becomes high self-esteem, where the person is egocentric. But the person with the right kind of self-esteem neither thinks himself miserable nor thinks himself to be the Lord, but inside that person is confident because he says, God is with me, so who else can be against me? And so this person works with self-esteem. You should have self-confidence. What Swamiji meant was you should have self-confidence, self-esteem, that is good, without becoming arrogant and without becoming a miserable wretch, that I am a no good. Even that you don't need to say that I am a nobody. In fact, Swamiji even said it very beautifully. There was another very beautiful line. He says, Nisargadatta Maharaj, he's a great saint in India who lived in the 20th century. He actually realized within 2.5 years. This saint is a very interesting. He used to make bidis. He used to make these little cigarettes, homemade cigarettes, and he was a cigarette maker. And he used to do that for a living. He would make cigarettes and sell them. He met a guru, and the guru told him, you are that. You are not this bidi maker. You are that. You are that consciousness. You are not this ordinary human being. He said, I am that. Yes, you are that. So for 2.5 years, he just wandered the country saying, I am that, I am that, I am that. Because his guru had told him, and he had faith. And in 2.5 years, he became a realized master. And then his language, if you read his book, it is so difficult to understand because his thoughts were so high. It was not easy to understand him. How did an uneducated bidi maker, how could he come up with those profound thoughts? It is unbelievable. I have tried to read his book, and believe me, it's not easy. His book called I Am That. He didn't write it. It was people asking him questions and him giving answers. Very, very intellectual, amazing. And he was an uneducated bidi maker who was making cigarettes. So he actually says in one place, he says, again, I went off the topic, but talking about it, but he says, when I am alone, I am nothing. When I am alone, when I am sitting in my meditation, then I am nothing. Then that consciousness alone is, I don't exist. But when I am in the world, I am everything. Everything is me. They are all me. So when I am alone, I am nothing. When I am with the people, I am everything. I asked Swami Ishwarananda, and he said it very beautifully. He said that, if somebody gets changed, I asked Swamiji, I said, you know, you give so many talks, and people come and tell you, you know, they have changed and they have benefited. How do you deal with that? So he said, I didn't change them. The knowledge changed and they were ready to be changed. He says, because I speak to thousands of people, but out of them, how many actually change? Very few. So those few were ready to be changed, and it was the knowledge that changed them. I didn't. So that's how these Mahatmas, that's how they handle their ego, because they then, like you said, become a channel for. And he said, it's Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, who gave me this knowledge, and the Lord, and the person who changed was ready to change. I didn't do anything. Because I spoke to 1,000 people, only one changed, so it wasn't me. If it was me, then all the 1,000 should have changed. That's why when you meet these people, it's, you know, at every breath you can get a teaching. It's amazing. Swami Ishwarananda, especially I have spent a fair amount of time with him. And so it's always good. You always learn something. Every time some acharya comes, at least one or two things you learn. And that's why one should go to these lectures and classes, because they are full of wisdom. And all we have to do is, it's like the river is pouring. It's all you have to do is put your part. open and clean part, and it, you know, the knowledge will flow into you. You just have to become open and accept, and the knowledge is constantly flowing.